Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Welcome along to Chinwag with yours truly, Sister Bang Bang of the Manchester Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Stand by for lots of malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat,
and nothing but the whole truth.
No way.
It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang.
What's more?
Today's show contains words of wisdom, sublime words, and rude words too. So if you're of a nervous disposition, fly away, my pretty. If, however, you're made of sterner stuff, then settle back for another fabulous edition of...
Well, hello, kids. Yes, another fantastic episode of Chinwag. I've been looking forward to this one because I've got a very naughty boy in front of me, somebody who I've known for years and years and years.
Yeah, okay, stop there, stop there.
It is, of course, Mr. Showbiz himself of the Gay Village, Mr. John Hamilton.
I'm not going to cheer myself, but yes!
And you've got a few other non-de-plumes as well, haven't you? We'll come to those. Some of them not very polite and only used by other businesses in the Gay Village, aren't they?
This is true.
Mr. John Hamilton, I'm going to drop the mister.
Yeah.
Just call you John. I have known you for years, haven't I?
A very long time, dear.
Ever since the days of when we just used to have gas, isn't it, yeah. Really?
We could go all the way back to Mesmac, go back to all the way. It's got to be 20 years plus.
It must be.
It's got to be plus.
Don't tell anybody.
It's got to be 20 years plus. It has to be, because we were doing Hell for Leather. And then it was Hellfire and stuff like that when we actually worked together, but we crossed paths well before that.
And we'll let you know if you sat there thinking, what the hell does that mean? At Mesmac, we will just tell you a bit more about those a bit later. But, John, I'm going to take you back a little farther than 20 years, nearer 60. When you were just an infant...
Oh, you bugger.
He's not really. Let's go way back. I want to find out a little bit more about you during this episode of Chinwag. And what was little John like? Where were you for a start? You weren't in Manchester, were you?
No. I was a little Irish child. Irish child at the age of so many months. My parents uprooted and moved to Birmingham because my dad was building the Spaghetti Junction. So when you see all those cracks in it, that's like my life.
Right.
So there you go. So blame my father for that, God rest his soul. So we moved there in the 60s. So I grew up in Birmingham.
I never knew that. Yeah. I always thought you were an Irish child, but that's where you come from, straight to Manchester. No.
So we grew up there in a back-to-back house.
Yeah.
You know, no bathroom, shared toilet at the end of the path.
It's like an episode of Coronation Street, isn't it?
There wasn't a kitchen, it was a scullery. So, you know, if there's any old people out there, they'll remember what a scullery is.
What, and a tin bath in front of the fire?
Exactly, a tin bath in front of the fire. Yeah, and that was up till 1971.
How long did it take to fill your bath?
Oh, I don't know. I was young then. Gosh, do you think I remember that? 1971, bloody hell. I know I'm old. But then 1971, we moved out into the country, which was to one of these brand-new housing estates that all the cities built. So it was a big council estate we built, and we moved there, and it was posh because we had an inside toilet and then a bathroom. We had two toilets, three bedrooms, a dining room, kitchen, and a living room. We were posh.
How many of you were there in the family?
At that time, there was just me, my sister, and my mum and dad.
Right. And you had two toilets. That's really quite posh.
That's really quite posh. Yeah. But that's what all the houses had then, you see.
Just think of your poor mother when she had to sort of keep those two clean and all the toilet rolls that were needed.
My mum was too busy in bingo, love. She didn't care.
I got to ask you, yeah. tell us a bit about your family then. So you said that your dad was, a construction worker?
Yeah, my dad was an only child. When I say an only child, not an only child. He was adopted.
Right.
You know, and at the age of 12... At the age of 12, they just told him to go on his own life. So that's what he did.
Oh.
He's never had a family or anything like that. We were his family. So everything he did was for us. You know, so we're quite privileged, really. And he worked 7 days a week to make sure we had everything that he didn't have.
Right. What about your mum? What was her background?
My mum was a medical worker. She was a nursing auxiliary. She worked in psychiatric hospitals, that type of thing, up till her mid-40s. And then she retired due to ill health.
And then you came along and ruin the whole family, eh?
Yeah, I came along, and then my other sister came along, and that was it, really. And then 10 years, what was it? 10 years after me, my mum had another daughter that was unexpected, so then there was three of us.
Three daughters?
Yeah, that's what my dad said. He said, I've always wanted three daughters. That's before I even came out, you know what I mean?
So what was school like for little John?
School was horrible because I was picked on. I absolutely hated it. I can't tell you how it was. I got beat up in my first year of senior school by a schoolgirl bully. So that was my next 4 years was a nightmare because I was beat up by a girl.
Let's have a joint gasp here.
So it was a nightmare. Then in the fifth year, I'd had so much pent-up anger, stuff like this. The school bully, the boy, when we was in English class, started picking on me because it was funny, stuff like this. And our English teacher wasn't there, and it was this PE substitute teacher. You know, when those PE teachers would come in and substitute their lessons?
Yeah.
So he'd come in and I had my brand-new shirt on. I can still see it now, my brand-new shirt on, and this guy was flicking his ink pen on my back and my new shirt. And I said, please don't do that, David. Why, what are you going to do about it? Please don't do that, David. So he just carried on. So we had the desks with the flip-up lids. You remember those?
I do. In the inkwells.
Picked one of those up and threw it on top of his fucking head.
No!
Yeah. Everything. The whole class. Because we're in these modern schools with windows in the corridors from top to floor with a door. So classes on the other side of the corridor could see what was happening and stuff like that. So basically the whole class went up against the wall because I'd lost my temper. Seriously went psycho. And I got him on the floor and I beat shit out of him. And I beat shit out of him. We had to go to hospital.
What did the teacher do? What did the headmaster do?
The teacher couldn't do anything. He was in shock.
Yeah, I bet.
Couldn't do. I was just like, I've had 5 years of this being picked on. I've had enough now. So I was summoned to the headmaster's office afterwards and told off through a grin. Through a grin, the headmaster was grinning while telling me like this. He said, I'm sorry, but I've got to suspend you, John. I said, because it was an act that, you know, so we'll have to suspend you for a week. I went, okay. Then it was like, you know, I told him what happened. He said, well, we've been waiting somebody to do it to him for years. He said, but I'm not condoning it, that. So I had my hand slapped, but it was fine. They carried on a week later. And then the rest of the year was the best year I had.
Well, you had lots of friends.
Yeah, though. I made a lot of friends. Not so much a lot of friends. I mean, he came and got me on the street and got revenge, but nobody saw that, only him. Right. But I did the whole thing when he punched me. Oh, I'm on the floor. Oh, I'm really sore. Oh, you've killed me. I always knew I was an actor. So I did all that. So he got it and then he stormed out and he felt better for it, you know what I mean, all of that. So, but after that, we then became friends.
No.
We then became friends.
Have you been to his wedding and all that shit?
Well, we were quite... I mean, he died in a motorbike crash in his mid-20s, but... we became friends and stuff like that after years after that.
Right.
So it's funny, really, how things happen.
So sort of leaping forward to more today, is the fact that you're Mr. Showbiz. You love putting a turn on there. You own a club here. You've done club nights.
Yeah,
but ultimately, was that back then where you started?
Yeah, because I was going, how did it start? My mum said, well, you don't remember. She said, you used to put on... Your dad was a builder, she said, and he used to nick all his materials and put scaffolding up and build stages and put plays on. He said, and then charge the local kids in to see the show.
What were the shows then?
Oh, I can't remember what the shows were, but, you know, like pantomimes type stuff. And then there was other things, like when my parents used to go away, I used to put parties on and charge people and decorate the garage up into a club.
I love the fact that you, even as a kid, you're charging people.
Oh, it was all about the money, love. But charging the kids coming in, and when I used to have parties and everybody used to put money in the pot and we put these discos on and stuff like that. So when I look back now, I suppose I was destined to do it.
Well, that's the only thing you could have done, wasn't it? Go forward and own nightclubs.
Yeah, my education wasn't that good. You know what I mean? Being dyslexic, I couldn't actually be a brain surgeon or anything like that.
What were you good at school? Did you get any exams?
I got all B's and C's, which was CSEs in those days. And then I resat. I went and done A-levels and something happened with that. I don't know what I got with that. I got something anyway, because that enabled me to go on to drama school. So they went to drama school, did the degree, not degree, it was a diploma shit thing in that. And that just carried on then. And then I went and done a bit of, youth work teaching.
So back to when you went to drama school, what was that like, performing arts?
I don't remember you.
I was doing that at the same time. I don't remember you being there.
I was at Coventry Centre for the Performing Arts, darling, attached to Warwick University.
Mine was Derby.
So I did that. One thing I always remember, the first week we were there, he lined us all up, the school principal, because he was a real lovey. Failed actor, but he was a lovey. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And lined us all up like that, and he went through us, and he pointed at each one of us and what we'd be, where our career should be, looking at us. And he come to me, and he went, character actor, went through like that. I went, oi, what, character actor, does that mean because I'm ugly? He said, that's what he did. He went, John, I'm just telling you what you're suitable for in your career. I said, so you're telling me I'm never going to make the lead? You pointed at him because he's got lovely blue eyes and blonde hair. Like that. And like, that was it, me at drama school. I caused a hayum.
You did, didn't
we
you?
Had, I always remember doing a workshop. I say, doing a Stanislavski workshop.
That's serious shit.
I know, serious shit. And they flew one of the major, major teachers over from America to do this workshop. And we had everybody there, everybody at the university, everybody was here, because this was such a big person, and they're talking about it and stuff like that. And I just stood up and went, look, I understand what you're trying to do. I said, but it's not me. I said, I don't understand why I would fuck my brain up believing I'm a tree. I said, I don't understand why you would want to do that and live like that.
Because you want to be a cloud.
Yeah, and I kept saying, I think you're causing mental health issues here by doing that. Why can't you just act the part? Mm. And then it was like, John, get out. You're missing the whole point.
Yeah, but what is the point of being a tree?
And that was it. I just was, you know. And then I found out years later that I think it was Olivier or Gilgill said the same thing. Have they never thought of acting?
Well, absolutely. You're making me have ideas in my head, actually, because I've got an idea for doing a play. I might have to speak to you after this. Yeah, it's interesting. So you were destined, obviously, because the teacher was telling you that you were destined for more theatrical-type ventures. Out of school then, into your 20s, what happened with growing up?
I'd be part of a youth club, with theatre companies, stuff like that, did all of that, theatre and education. Then I went and met a boy, came out, met a boy, decided we wouldn't live in Birmingham, let's go and live in Devon. So I don't even go there. So it was about that nobody would steal him and nobody would steal me.
For our overseas listeners, Devon from Birmingham is about a billion miles away.
Yeah, it's right in the sticks where the leg sticks out of England. So I went down there, ended up doing some basic hotel work and teaching as well. And we did that for a while, and it was great, and we were happy, and it was brilliant, it was idyllic. I can't tell you, it was fabulous. You know, this is before the age of consent, all of that, you know. So we did that, and then I thought we were doing really well, but I didn't realise he was sleeping behind my back. Shock, horror.
Bitch.
I wouldn't mind if he was doing it in front of me, I could have watched, but to do it behind my back.
Joined in.
Yes. But yeah, so that broke all my dreams. I had my heart broken, everything. So I sold up everything and went and toured Europe.
Flipping, eh? You're not even hitting 25 yet, but I don't think so. What at this point, what was, on the scale of 1 to 10, what was the sequin factor of your life at this point?
This time, I did a couple of charity shows down there at the seaside, out of season, you know, for all the locals and stuff, that, raising money for cancer and stuff like that, down there at that time. And I used to have two girls with me, and we used to do all these numbers and drag and stuff like that, because I was the character that everybody loved.
Character act.
You know, so, yeah, exactly. So we ended up, and that's how it started.
So that was a high sequin thing.
Yeah, that's where it's like just tacky drag back there. But, you know, the people loved it because it was all making fun of what was going on, you know. So we did that. And then, as I said, I toured Europe and then I came back and my parents had moved back to Ireland then. So I went to live with them till I got my head sorted.
Right.
And then my friend that I met in Devon was getting married, said, John, come to my wedding. So I said, all right. And she'd moved to Eastbourne by Brighton. Yeah. So I went there.
South Coast.
Went there. And she got me a job in a hotel because I didn't have any money. So here's a job in a hotel till I get married for a week. So I went, all right. And then I met my husband, one of my long-term partners.
Right.
I spent nearly 12 years with that guy.
Yeah, you kind of, what I describe as a sort of a serial falling in love person rather than a shag around town person.
Oh, I love shagging around town if my partner would let me. Fucking hell. excuse the language. But, yeah, I, I like the home life. I like the home life, stuff like that. I like being the showmanship, but I like to come home and sit and watch telly and stuff like that. You know, I do like that. I like stability.
There's a really big difference, isn't there, people, perceiving you as Mr. Show Business, and you love the bright suits and the sequins and the spotlight and the microphone, but ultimately, when you see people like that, the home life is always very, very quiet and calm.
Yeah, I mean, when we go on... So take it... My current husband. She's over 15 years and we're married and stuff like that, which I'll give you a story about that in a bit.
In a bit.
What was the question you asked me? Was it...
It's about difference.
Yeah, I think for me is that when we go away from here, because we're 24/7 running the business... that when we go away, we used to go away and party and club and stuff like that. Now we just go away and sit and watch telly in a hotel room and do nothing and eat. Or I go to my mother's and we sit and do nothing and sleep. We don't do anything. And people say, what do you mean? Nothing. Oh, it was fabulous.
You do need some data. Yeah. Well, what would you say is... How do people perceive you? How do people paint John Hamilton nowadays?
I really don't know. I've changed a lot. I mean, I did go through my hedonistic phase about 10 years ago, which was party, 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 drugs, drinking, sex and rock and roll. Mm. And then I came out of that. I mean, it's 15 years ago. I'm 15 years with my husband, so it's my husband that I've changed my life with.
Right.
So, you know, and do I regret any of it? No, I had a great time.
Yeah.
I had a great time. That's part of my life done. Do I recommend it? Don't recommend anything. You do what you want to do. I did it. I've done it. I've moved on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all I can say, really.
And it's made John Hamilton what he is today.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I gave it up. I did everything, did all my counselling, did all of that, and then split up with a partner that was part of that scene, and I had to leave him to move on.
Yeah.
And then I went to America to, you know... start fresh. At that time, everybody knew Mr. Poptastic John Hamilton, and I couldn't go into a bar, I couldn't go into a sauna, I couldn't go on Grindr or whatever it was, because it was Mr. Poptastic.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't, you know, find anyone or have sex or anything. It was a nightmare. So I went to America. I know it sounds extreme. I thought, no one will know me there. So I went to America and I went to New Orleans, and I met my husband there on the first night.
Of course, there is a bit to fill in that. We have jumped a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right. Mr. Poptastic, John is well known for being Mr. Poptastic. What is that? Well, we're going to find out shortly. But you're listening to Chinwag with myself, Sister Bang Bang, and my special guest today, John Hamilton, Mr. Showbiz.
Do you fancy a right good night out?
A night full of comedy, glamour and camp?
Well, make a date, the Village Show Bar.
You'll love our outrageous entertainment.
Lots of drink promotions and, of course, your in-house show team.
Oh, and don't forget the American-style cuisine. The Village Show Bar.
Right opposite Churchill's. See you there.
The Village Show Bar.
Hi friends, it's Sister Indica, your homegirl for life. Not only am I gorgeous, not only am I a sister of perpetual indulgence, but I'm also host of the podcast Joy Bomb. I rant and rave about pop culture, politics, music, TV, and more. I interview all sorts of interesting people and play underground music you probably don't know but should. So what's stopping you? Subscribe on iTunes.
Joy Bomb.
If it's good enough for Sister Bang Bang, it's good enough for you.
Are you receiving us, Earth? Are you receiving us, Earth?
Malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat, and nothing but the whole truth. It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Goodbye.
Yes, it is Chinwag with myself, Sister Bang Bangladesh. John Hamilton is my special guest. He's also known as Mr. Poptastic. More about why he's known as Mr. Poptastic shortly. But John, are you ready now to play Bang Bang's Quick Six?
Let's play your Quick Six.
Hooray! It's really easy. It's six quick questions, six long answers, so we can go off on complete and utter tangents, darling.
Oh, all right, okay.
So it's just a way of getting you to talk. Number one.
Get me to talk. Me to shut up.
No, shut up. Should do the opposite, really. Yeah. Should limit you to 60 seconds. Question number one. Heaven or hell?
That's really hard to say. Heaven or hell? Oh, my God. I like the in-between where I am now.
Mm.
I like the in-between where I am now because I do like the idea of heaven. I do like the, and I'm also a bit naughty on the side, so I like a bit of hell as well. So currently, where I am, I would say I'm in heaven and hell.
And strangely enough, you used to run a nightclub called Hellfire. Didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, you know that very well. Didn't you?
I know that
together.
Very well. Yeah.
So which is what was one of the biggest fetish nights in the country, if you remember. So
most notorious.
Yeah, I know. When we look at back and think what we did, get oh my god.
You know? Oh, you remember when there was a huge, large bodyguards fainted at one of our shows?
Oh my god, you remember that? And it was at the university as well, and I didn't know what they were doing.
It's a good job nobody knows. We're so oh god. Got to press polls. Now everybody knows. Never mind. So a bit of heaven and a bit of hell.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Do you think that sort of paints a reasonable picture of you? Would you want to?
I think so. I like the calm, but I also like the naughtiness. Mm. You know, I'm a rebel inside. You know, as can be currently what's going on with politics, currently what's going on with HIV politics, currently what's going on with gay politics. I'm quite a rebel on that type of thing.
It's just a total shame, isn't it, that as you get older, you want to be more on the hell side, but you just haven't got the energy.
Oh, tell me about it. Oh, I'd rather have a pot noodle in an episode of Coronation Street.
Oh, yeah, in front of a roaring fire. I know where you're coming from there, girlfriend. Now, question number two. Question number two, Bang Bang's Quick Six. For John Hamilton, will it be money or fame? That's going to be a difficult one.
I'd rather have health.
Well, it is own to your interpretation. Yeah.
I'd rather have health. I think having seen my father and suffered for 12 years with kidney failure and stuff like that, and seen various friends, you know, and HIV and all of that, I'd rather have health. Mm. I don't need fame, although I crave it. Money.
You have it.
Money can get me the things I want, but it doesn't matter what money you have. If you haven't got your health, there's no point in having it. You know, you can be sick in bed, dying with being a millionaire. It doesn't get you anywhere, does it?
No.
I know that sounds really... if you asked me a couple of years ago, I would have said fame in the height of poptastic. I love it because I spent all my money and it went up my nose, it went up everybody else's nose, and we travelled the world and all that type of thing.
Didn't go up my nose. Miserable selfish cow.
But that was part of that time. Money was when I was young. Yeah, I wanted money, I wanted a house, I wanted this. But no health.
There's certainly a thing with fame, though, isn't it, that you can use it to help. It doesn't have to be just Hello Magazine and Kardashian type thing.
Yeah, well, somebody said to me years ago when I was starting pop and we were travelling everywhere around the country, they said, remember, John, on your way up, be nice to the people, because on your way down, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, well, you've got that totally wrong, haven't you?
What?
The reason I'm sat here is because you paid me.
But, I mean, it is, and I see a lot of people that I get quite bitchy as they're going up and they think they're super. Mm. And I think, babes, you're going to hit the ground hard when the light goes out. You know, and I've been quite lucky. I had a great poptastic, and when the economy failed there, you know, in 2008, we lost everything. Mm. We lost all the touring nights, everything, so I had to go back to my grassroots again and start back from the bottom and build my way up.
But sometimes those things are meant to happen and make you a bigger and better person.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Sounds a bit worthy to say that, but it's true, though, isn't
it? You know, this place, you know, we're in a bar now that we own, and it's taken us 3 years to get to where we are. Mm. You know, we're paying the bills, but that's it.
Just thank God you're not touring, because if you were, you might not be here.
This is true, because that's when I first... The first year of pop, we did that, didn't we? I bought a nightclub and went under for £1.2 million. But I'm not bitter, you know. But you know, that's part of life. It's that I say. So for me, money or fame, I have to say neither. I'd rather have health. Now I'm at my age, and I know that sounds really corny, but I'm sorry, that's where it stands.
72, by the way, if you're interested.
That's just my waist.
Okay, that was question number two. Bang Bang's Quick Six, we're moving on to question number three. This one's going to be interesting to know what you think. John Hamilton, bitch or butch?
Versatile. If it's more than 9 inches. If it comes to sex, if it's more than 9 inches, well, obviously, I'm passive. If it's anything less than that, I'm not interested.
What's the percentage and how do you meet these people?
I don't know, butch or bitch. I would say as a personality, I'm more bitch. as a personality, more Queenie and stuff like that. I couldn't stand in a road and have a fisticuff fight, but I could slap your face with my nails. You know, so that type of thing.
I love that.
You know. But, you know, sexually, it's whatever floats me boat. Currently, I'm married, so I don't have sex. We just watch the TV now with a bowl of Cheritos or whatever they're called, and cheesy dip.
Dried shredded wheat or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's
but 15 years, that's quite a lot in gay relationships, isn't it?
Yeah. It was supposed to be, in the true words of Queer as Folk, it's a one-night stand that never went away.
I've completely forgotten that quote from there. Yeah, I must use that more often. So that was question three. John Hamilton. Moving in to question number four. Actually, we kind of touched on this, but I'll ask it anyway. Clubbing or at home?
Oh, that is a hard one. Now it would be at home. Now it would be at home. If you mean if I was working it, if I'm working the club, stuff like that, then I'm clubbing. But if you're asking me, do I prefer to go out clubbing now or do I prefer home, then it would be home.
Mm-hmm.
That's purely down to my age.
Mm.
Pure because I've done it all. You name it, I've done it. I've done every experience going. Nobody can tell me I haven't done it because I've done it.
Mm.
You know,
I've seen you do it. Yeah. Well, I've seen you've done most things.
Yeah.
Not everything.
So I've experienced the ultimate. I've gone from gay days. I've gone to circuit parties. I've gone to small house meetings, everything when it comes to a gay lifestyle. I've done it all. So, and I've experienced every clubbing thing, you know, so...
House meetings, what are they?
Oh, anyway, let's move on.
Oh, not the sort of Sunday afternoon before any clubs and pubs really were open type of house parties, you mean?
Yes, that type of thing.
Oh, I remember that. They used to be so cute. I used to love going to a Sunday house party. Because you only got it if you sort of went out at Sunday lunchtime, didn't you? Went to like club like Archway, I remember, waiting for somebody to say, all right, party at my place.
Because we had no license after 2 o'clock, was it?
No,
it wasn't. So we had to wait till like 5 or 7 o'clock, whatever it was.
And then the clincher deal for me was, the fact is, yes, but have you got a drag bag? Because if you haven't, I'm not interested.
Whenever I had a chill out at mine, everybody used to run up to my... drag room and raid the drag room.
Well, I'm not surprised. And looking at your drag room, the doors are wide open. It's just like a glitter ball's exploded in there, hasn't it, really? I must try on. Are they of larger size in there, John?
There's a few larger sizes there, just to keep people happy.
Only because I like it roomy, of course, not because of my waist size or anything like that. Okay, so that was question number 1, 2, 3, 4. Question 5 in Bang Bang's Quick Six. Mum or dad?
Mum or dad? Is that me? Am I a mum or dad? I would say I'm a mum. But when I'm kicking off, I'm a dad.
Hmm.
Yeah. If you say about my family, mum or dad, I am a mummy's boy. When you see my mum is a mummy's boy. Was never really close to my father because he was an Irish navvy, so mum or dad. I miss my dad loads now that he's gone. But I'm a mummy's boy. How's that?
That's fine. When did your dad die?
About 2 years ago.
Right. So you've had him for the vast part of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. But the last 12 years of his was really quite hard, and I spent a lot of time with him in the last couple of years of his life. I spent more time with him. Right. You know, one of the big things that he said and over the years, stuff like that, was that he was proud of me.
Oh.
So that was nice.
Yeah. You say my dad died many years ago, and I never got that.
Yeah.
And you do want that, don't you?
Yeah, because I was never the boy he wanted, or I feel I was never the boy he wanted.
Mm.
You know, I would like to have been that lad in that car that go and do men's things with him. I mean, he took me when I was a child, or a young lad, he took me on the building site with him to carry bricks to be a hod carrier. I couldn't even pick the hod up, never mind put bricks in it.
It ruined your nails as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I was, you know, quickly taken off site and said, go and make the tea for the boys instead.
Mm. Oh, you'd be good at that.
Yeah, exactly. So... You know, but yeah, so, mum or dad, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how's that for an answer?
No, that's absolutely fine. That, you know, that's the first time that in all the Chinwag episodes that somebody's interpreted that as being themselves as well. You know, you said, am I a mum or am I a dad?
Yeah.
First time ever that. So that's, you see, that's a great thing when you don't say, you're not allowed to ask for further information. Great, isn't it interesting? We're moving into the final question now. This is going to be hideously difficult for you, John Hamilton. And as some of my regular listeners will know what the question is, you might have got an inkling. John Hamilton, question six, is it tweed or is it glitter?
Oh, please take a look around the room. Take a look around the room. I don't think I'm a twin set and pearls type of girl, no. It's definitely glitter and glam and Takarama.
You certainly, you know, you certainly make sure that the I don't know, is a third world economy of sequins is well and truly bought by your purse.
Yeah, I think I love a bit of pizzazz. People like a bit of shine and glitz and glam. Mm. You know, through this, you know, this dark era that we're currently going through, I think a bit of sparkle helps us all, doesn't it?
And you can never have enough glitter.
Oh, tell me, tell me. And I found a supplier that sells it by the bucket load.
We must compare notes in this respect. Though, actually, Sister Bang Bang, I'm not really known for glitter. It's bang, other things. Bangy, bangy, bangy. I'm making sure that the drag queens retain that particular element. But that was not too bad, was it, Chinwag's Bang Bang's Quick Six?
That was all right, not too bad. I was expecting something really deep and heavy. Yeah.
Well, to be honest, they were quite deep, but you didn't actually realise it. I was probing deep into you. This is Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang and my special guest, Mr. John Hamilton.
Hey, kids, you know that every episode of Chinwag is done completely free, doesn't cost a penny or a dime, and it's just one of the many ways that we sisters try and entice you to donate money to good causes. So, if you have a few pennies to spare, please go now to our website at www.themanchestersisters.org and just click on one of the donate buttons. Every tiny bit helps, and we rely on your generosity. So donate now at www.themanchestersisters.org. Thank you from the bottom of our goodly hearts. Don't touch that dial.
Sister Bang Bang,
spoiling it for everyone.
It is Chinwag. Sister Bang Bang here with John Hamilton, known in Manchester's gay village as Mr. Poptastic and Mr. Showbiz. It's strange, actually, how there are always masculine pronouns there, isn't there, really?
Yes.
Rather than Miss Showbiz, which I was more unlikely to call it. Now, we've mentioned Poptastic. It's popped up a few times. Poptastic is quite phenomenal, really, in terms of a brand. It started out as a little nightclub, which popped up in other people's clubs, didn't it? It was a night out. How was Poptastic? Describe it to us when it first started.
At the time, all we had was dance clubs, and everybody was popping pills and E's and stuff like that, and nobody was communicating. Everyone was just doing yum, 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 type of thing.
That's like these days with apps like Scruff.
Yeah, so it's true. So we decided that the music that we're having was leaning towards back to guitar music, live music, stuff like that. And so we're getting into the Britpop era. And when I first came here, we used to have a student night and that faded out. So I thought, well, there must be a need. We're one of the biggest student populations in Europe and there must be a need for this type of club night. So I set up an indie alternative night for lesbian and gay students. Mm-hmm. And we just thought, oh, we'll give it a go. Bloom's Hotel said you can use our club in the basement, we don't use it. So I said, all right then. So that's where we started. So we're expecting about 50 people. You know, give it a small go, stuff like that. The DJ I got from Manchester Poly, who was doing an indie night there, and it was a straight lad. And I had a meeting with him outside Manto, and he said, yeah, I'll give it a go. You know, because I didn't know any gay indie DJs at that point. He said, yeah, I'll give it a go, no worries. You know, and he stuck with me for over 15 years.
Whoa.
He did. Now he's an MP in the House of Parliament. So he is a full-time MP now, Jeff Smith. God bless him. So you can blame him for the state of the country.
That's a lot to pile on his shoulders. Oh,
well, he's an MP, love. They can deal with it. It's all politics. But, yeah, so we started then. You know, that 50 people that we thought turned to be over 250 on the first night, and it just grew and grew and grew into the brand that it is today.
Where did you move from? Where hotel were you in?
With Bloom's Hotel.
Bloom's.
From there, we moved to down beside Paradise Factory for a short while.
Is it Madison's or something
I can't remember. It was a little tiny club.
Yeah.
But we moved there and that was just mad. That was just absolutely mad. It was good because it was summer and it worked really well. And then the new owner of... what was it? Mutz Nuts came to us and asked to move there, which was the old Lacage. So we moved there and that's where we stayed for well over 15 years.
Yeah.
We stayed there because
I remember going to there, but it was like a club split into two halves, wasn't it?
Yeah, indie room one side, trash disco the other side, and then became a phenomenon. And then we took it on tour around the country, around Europe, and stuff like that. And then the economy hit, and of course everybody pulled in the strings and didn't want to spend money, so we just concentrated on the Manchester brand.
But ultimately, John, isn't that so much easier? I mean, having to take a night around. Europe is a pain.
It's glamorous at the beginning, but when you were doing it week in, week out, five nights a week...
But it's only glamorous once the doors open, isn't it?
Yeah, nobody sees the bit of travelling. Nobody seems, you know, that, oh, my God, I'm too tired to get out of bed. Have a sniff of Coke and away I go.
Right.
That's what it was in those days. You know, I hasten to say that's not my lifestyle anymore. You know, and people say...
Lucasade, no, and Philosan.
Oh, don't tell me. A can of Red Bull and that does me for 5 minutes. But I've done that. I've been part of that scene. I'm away from that scene. You know, that's just what happens. I understand how rock stars get caught up in it now and stuff like that. But, you know, it's part of life.
Well, yeah, got you to where you are today. But today is a different kettle of fish, isn't it, with Poptastic?
Yeah, absolutely. We moved venue last Pride. We moved to AXM upstairs with Hayden Pope, God rest his soul. We met up and decided to move and we went up there. And it was the best decision we made. You know, it reinvigorated the brand and the club and brought new life into it now, and it's great to work it again. It's fun,
right.
You know, and stuff like that. And of course we bought a bar 3 years ago on Canal Street, so Bar Pop on Canal Street, and that's now, after 3 years, is holding its own and become a brand of the street that everybody knows.
Right. So Poptastic's not actually in Bar Pop?
No, that's at AXM, right. Which is on Princess Street.
How come you've kept the two? So
because it's two different entities. That's a student night, club night. This is a gay-owned and gay-managed bar for the community, and not just the gay community, the community that lives and works around here. Right. You know, we refuse to make this a gay-only bar. Because there's no need in this day and age.
Mm.
We fought for equality, so we've got to accept equality. You know, I respect that some venues want to stay men only and women only. That's fine, but that's not me, and there's not enough money in that either.
Well, you certainly made a mark. You know, everybody knows you as Mr. Poptastic, wasn't it? Into, but you've done an awful lot of work sort of behind the scenes as well, and you're well known. Certainly in my world, for being such a massive fundraiser for charity. George Harris Trust is one of the many. How did you sort of get involved in the more health side?
That's how I started off. I started off being a volunteer with MESMAC years ago, which was then turned into HGM, which then turned into the LGF, which now turned into so many letters I can't remember because I'm dyslexic.
MESMAC stands for...
Men Who Have Sex With Men Action... AIDS in the community or something like that.
Right, so that was MESMAC. Then it turned into HGM, which is...
Healthy Gay Manchester.
Right.
And then that moved into Lesbian and Gay Foundation. And now it's the Lesbian and Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, some other...
Pick a letter of the alphabet now.
I mean, that's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way things have developed. Yeah. I mean, I'm not part of that set. But I've always involved with community act, you know, community work... political work, stuff like that, you know, the stories I could tell you, you know, working with Stonewall and DJing for Stonewall and Poptastic, you know, in the House of Commons and stuff like that, having all these MPs bopping around to Kylie, I should be so lucky, lucky, lucky. Yes, if you get voted back in. So, you know.
Is it, you're just releasing that inner queenness.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But it's things I've done, you know, I've been quite privileged, I think. you know, if I could sit down and get somebody to write my autobiography, I'd love to see it.
Well, I'm open to offers. I can write, apparently.
Yeah, I can't, unfortunately. I can tell a good tale.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you're not doing too badly in this chinwag, actually, yeah. at the moment. So a lot of you know, inroads into health, and also with Manchester Pride as well, haven't you?
Yeah. I was chair of the first village business association, and we took back Pride after a few mess-ups. And put Pride on and stuff like that. So I was quite proud of that and changing the whole setup of Pride. Be quite actively involved in all of that.
See, I remember, and it wasn't that many years ago, when August Bank Holiday, which is when Manchester Pride is traditionally held, Manchester was dead. It was a dead city. Nothing happened here. Everybody used to go up to Blackpool.
Yeah, Sunday we all went to Blackpool. It was a day at Blackpool, the big flamingo, so everybody caught the train and went up there for the day. And then at that time, we needed fundraising. Because of the epidemic at that point, and there wasn't much funding, you know, for the hospitals and stuff like that. So a group of businesses got together with one of the, I think it was, George H. Trust then? I can't remember. But you know, we got together anyway and decided that we needed to take action, and then we put on a market stalls, and that's how it started. Three market stalls, I think it was, something like
that.
It
used to be the Gay Pub and Club Olympics as well.
Yeah, we used to do all the games and then fundraisers and then sponsor Solitaire and Roxy Hart and Terry Knight and stuff like that. You know, these were the main drag queens of the time, and get them to do silly things, stuff like that, like jumping into the canal, which we wouldn't dream of in this day and age.
Health and safety.
But at those times, we didn't care. It was all about raising funds. You know, and that's how it all started to the huge monster that it is now.
It is, Matt. How many do you reckon come over the 4 days of Manchester Pride?
I would say we're looking over 150,000 people, visitors, I guess. They say it's 35,000 a day, but we've got to think of the turnover and stuff. It's great and it's super. And I love it, and my business loves it, obviously. But in my heart of heart, I'm sad that it's now outgrown the place that it's in.
Yeah.
You know, the area is too small for the things it needs to do and to grow. It needs to move. And I know that a lot of businesses don't like me saying that, but unfortunately it has to. It has to. Because they can't do much else. You know, they can't put big acts on the stage because it's health and safety issues, they tell us. You know, it's outgrown it. We're now, you know, yes, we're raising money, yes, I respond to all of that, but when we've got the likes of Brighton Pride and Newcastle Pride and stuff like that, they're putting in parks and putting on big-name acts. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, that's what it's about now. That's what the kids want.
This is, it's going to be one of the most difficult things ever to happen, I reckon, because Manchester's gay village is, and I mean this in a very positive way, is a ghetto. It's a protective area. People like coming here. It's a feature. It's by a canal. It looks pretty. You know, you tried to open a club outside the gay village at one point and found it so difficult.
They just wouldn't travel. But the problem we've got now is we've lost three major areas where we could put stuff in for Pride because of the redevelopments of the areas, or the landowners want more money than what's actually it worth, i.e. Britannia Car Park. So we can't develop Pride anymore because we're limited on the space, which limits us on the capacity of the area, you know, and it's really quite hard.
Something that might well happen and will have to happen eventually, but I mean, it's difficult.
I'm glad I'm not part of that decision. You know, we looked at it, Andrew Stokes and myself looked at it when we were doing EuroPride, and we'd done the feasibility study, and it's 2/3 cheaper to move it out of the village and put it in a park, but obviously nobody wants it out of the village because it's all about money and tills ringing and stuff like that. But I'm looking at it from a community point of view. If I put my business head on, no, leave it here. Yeah. But from a community point of view, it needs to develop and move out. Whether you like that or not, I'm sorry, that's the way it is.
If we get like the big multi-story car park demolished, we could clear that out for a start. And you know, there's ways of doing it.
But you know, I leave that to Pride. I mean, they haven't got an easy job, so I leave that to them. Yeah. I'm just one of the critics at the side now, which I love doing.
God forbid you haven't got a sense of opinion and a sense of humour then.
Absolutely, I believe you've got to constantly prod someone that, you know, comes new into a job and believes they know it all. Not when I've sat there from the beginning of it all. Don't tell me that.
These youngsters nowadays,
I'm what they call, what is it they call a, not a patron, what is it they call, somebody as the I'm a historian of the village. I would consider my village, consider that I know the history of the last 25 years.
The fact that we've had Queer as Folk film here and Russell C. Davies throughout the series, you know, has put it on the map as well. People want to see the village.
Absolutely. And that caused an uproar in the village that we publicised this, it was a gay area. How dare we? I mean, oh, please grow up. Yeah, we fought for equality. Equality's going to open various doors. And, you know, when gays stand there and going, oh, there's too many straights in the village. Yes, there are. And the simple reason is you're sat at home on your gaydar, your BBRT, your grinder, whatever, you know, and you're not coming into the bars anymore to pick up. You're doing it on your phone and watching Emmerdale.
Mind you, I'm sat with the apps, but I don't manage to pick up, so it's no use for me there.
Yeah, if I was on an app, my husband would kill me, but that's another that's another issue.
We'll have to do you up and take pictures of you and make you look different, no, so he doesn't know.
The teeth are a giveaway.
We'll just smack you and stop you from smiling. Yeah. You mentioned about you know, big names, and you must have met a few over time. What were some of the big celebrities you bumped into?
Oh, God, where do I start? And I've never, ever took photos. Never took photos. Because I always believed when a celebrity was out, they were out in their own social time. And it wasn't about having snapshots. So I never, ever did photos. So I could tell you, you know, Manchester United used to come to Poptastic on a Tuesday night after the matches. Stuff like that. And I always remember shaking Schmeichel, who was the goalie then. You know, his hand, and my hand was the size of a baby's hand in his hand. I was like, oh my God. And all I kept thinking, God, I wonder if he's hung. And then swooning over David Beckham and Posh Spice all those. And then loads of celebrities, loads. Kylie, of course. And for me, one of the biggest celebrities I met was, and he tapped me on my shoulder because he was told I was one of his fans. And I wouldn't know what to do if he ever come up to me or anything like that because I've followed him for years, a great Shakespearean actor and stuff like that. And he tapped me on the shoulder and went, hello, John, could you get me a gin and orange? I was like, it was Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh, bless him.
I was like, oh, my God. So I couldn't speak or anything. I was like, oh, my God.
And then aren't they mobbed, though, if they come into, you know, a place like Poptastic? I mean, imagine Kylie.
No, because at that time we had the whole respectability thing going on, and there were certain boundaries that people played, but times have changed, obviously, with social media and instant phones and stuff like that.
I can imagine Kylie sort of getting lost, really, in terms of
I met Kylie at functions, at Stonewall Function, at the big hotel in London, I can't think of it now.
Oh, the Ritz or something?
No, it's the one with a big tree outside by Park Lane. It's a well-known one.
Yeah. Well-known one, we can't remember.
It's huge, but I did the Stonewall fundraiser there. So, but the, who else? Well, another famous one that I didn't actually meet, but I set up to meet, and the bugger died on me. Can you believe he died on me?
Quentin Crisp.
Quentin Crisp. I was so excited to meet Quentin Crisp, and we got tickets, and I was going for drinks with him after the show, and then the bugger died.
Do you remember that? I do, because I'd actually sorted out an interview to do with Quentin. Yeah. And I remember ringing up on the morning to confirm and just getting an answer phone. Yeah. And, of course, he'd passed away overnight.
He passed away. He landed, had food with the boys, and then died. Went to bed and died. It's like he wanted to come back home to die. I think that's...
Do you think he did? I don't know. Did he issue
that? It was 90-odd, don't forget. So, you know, but that was something that never happened. That obviously, oh, what if, you know?
Which actually brings us neatly to a close, unfortunately.
Well, somebody dying, thank you.
Well, yes, you.
I've died many a time on stage, trust me, love.
And now, look, on Chinwag, I'm actually going to ritually exercise John Hamilton and plunge a knitting needle through his eyeballs. No, of course not. John, yeah, it's been lovely chatting with you on Chinwag today to find out, well, probably only a slice of what you're about, but there's a lot more stories hidden away.
A lot more. One favourite one I will tell you. Oh. I've got to tell you, because I'm very proud of this and we didn't plan it. I married my husband in America.
You did say that earlier on in Chinwag, didn't you?
And this has only happened. We did a civil ceremony, you know, registry thing they do in America, but then we did a proper one in New York, because Tony was saying goodbye to move to America, so we'd done a proper marriage ceremony and everything. But we rented this bar out, and we thought, we'll rent this bar and we'll do it there and stuff like that. I got a vicar from MCC, Metropolitan Community Church to do it all of that, everything like that. But and we chose the date and stuff like that, and that was great. And the date we chose was the week that New York State did gay marriage.
Oh, the very first week
of gay marriage in New York. Several states chose that week. So we did that. And then the actual venue that we got married in was Stonewall.
Oh. So, the actual inn itself.
So, yeah, so we were there. I'm filling up now. But we were there, and then she'd done the whole history of the Stonewall riots and the fights for gay causes, stuff like that, and HIV and all of that. And here was the first marriage held in Stonewall. Mm. Like that. And it wasn't planned that way. It just happened.
Yeah.
And it was the first wedding that I had in Stonewall.
Also going back to your history of working with other sort of health authorities and being part of the Manchester scene, there was a real big link there, wasn't there?
Absolutely. For me, we had nearly 300 guests there. Nearly over 200 of them were straight. And to be realised, and there were so many people crying their eyes out.
Mm. Thanks for the invite. I was busy that day, wasn't I?
It was... anyway, I'm filling up now. But it was one of those things, and my husband had to sew a face on him because he can't do emotion. And he couldn't understand why all these people were crying when she was saying about what a big step that we were getting married. It was actually on the day of the signing of the law.
Right.
On the Friday.
So there's an anniversary there as well, as yours.
Yeah, so away home.
That's lovely, that. That's really nice.
But I had to find out. I have to go to America now. If I want to divorce him, that's the only issue. Oh, hey ho, we have these crosses to bear.
Don't look on the bad side of it. It's fabulous. Lovely for you to join us, I have to say, on Chinwag today. The last question, which I always ask, is what do you want on your gravestone?
Who the fuck was John Hamilton?
And so...
That's really like... Is that... What's... Is that any better? Hello, hello, hello. 1, 2. That's vile too much.
And so to the epilogue. Final call out, final call out, final call out. Yes, in 2 weeks' time, by the wonders of technology, Sister Indica and myself will be recording a special sister show where both of us will answer your question. All you have to do is get off your sweet ass and send your question over to either one of us. But you've got to do it now. What would you like to know about Sister Indica and Sister Bang Bang? Ask anything, absolutely anything. And we'll answer. Well, maybe. But time is running out. We need your question before July the 8th. Otherwise, you'll end up feeling glow and depressed knowing you've missed out on the fabulous opportunity to interrogate us. So message either one of us direct. Okay, I'm underlining that, bolding it and italicising. You've got to message us direct. Keep your question private and do it right now. The second, come on. And Sister Indica and I will look forward to answering it. Until next time, kids. Lots of love. Bang, bang.